You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, thanks for hitting play. Welcome to The Come Up. My name is Matt, and on this episode, a hilarious conversation with Leo Reich. Leo's solo show, Literally Who Cares, just completed a strictly limited engagement at the Greenwich House Theater off-Broadway, and when we talked, it was the day before his very first performance here in New York. As you'll hear, lately I've been really into the art form of comedy, so I was excited to ask Leo about his perspective on crafting a cohesive piece, who he's inspired by, and what it's been like to show up on stage and in the world as a queer 23-year-old. His answers and his show did not disappoint. I feel very lucky to have gotten a chat with him at this stage in his career, which feels like the very beginning of something very exciting. He's taking his show all over the world in the next few months, and I can guarantee this won't be the last time we see him here in New York. Okay, that's enough out of me for today. Without further ado, here is Leo Reich. Wait, you start performances tomorrow.
Yeah, that's actually so true. That's actually one of the most scary things I've ever heard said. But yes, that is true. I start tomorrow.
Have you done any of this material in America before, or is this the first time you'll be doing it here?
I have never done any material in America before. I have never so much as made someone crack a smile in America. This is the first. It's a big swing. I have to say, it is a big swing.
New York,
I'm just
going to
book it.
You weren't like, I'm going to Chicago or Miami or LA.
Let's just dive straight in.
Let's just jump straight in the deep end.
Yeah, 100%.
Have you been to America before?
I visited a bunch. This is it's not my first time in New York, and I've seen comedy in New York before, so I feel like I get the vibe.
Yeah, you understand. Right.
I'm getting, they're saying jokes, people are laughing. I'm like, I get it. I should fit in seamlessly. That's the idea, anyway.
I sure hope so. How long have you been doing this show for? This specific, like, work?
So this show... Yeah, this. Thank you for calling it a work. I'm going to refer to it as a work now as well.
Piece of work.
My masterpiece.
Yes.
I feel like the black turtleneck I'm wearing is really adding to a kind
perfect.
Of, you know, an interview with the artist kind of vibe. I've been doing this since I worked it up to the Edinburgh Fringe last year, which is a festival in Edinburgh that is all of August. But I was working on it for a few months leading up to that. But then August last year was when I really started just every goddamn day.
Same thing over and over and over.
Same thing.
I was talking to somebody about that the other day. So I'm a musician, and so I've been playing these like short sets for people. And I was like, man, I feel like I'm getting bored. I'm doing the same thing, same set over and over and over again. And I was like, I always feel like I have to bring new material. And my friend was like, yeah, but that's what comedians do all the time. They work the same set over and over and over and over again, which I guess I knew, but I hadn't like thought about.
I know. That's why it's so funny when, which isn't so much what I do, but like you go to comedy clubs and people are like, so the other day I was in the store and you're like, what, 9 years ago when you were, I mean, 400 years ago even like, no, you weren't ever, you've never been to a store. You made
you've
that
never
up.
Been in.
Like, they're like the performance of like spontaneity. Like, here's the thing that just came to me. Like you performed this 10 times tonight. Crazy. It makes you go nuts. Like that to have
like,
to be in that headspace.
Am I going crazy? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, to constantly be just bare-face lying to people every night of your life.
You had been working on the material for a couple months before Edinburgh. But what does that look like in terms of like building it out? You know what I mean? Like, how does that actually work and function?
I did a lot of like work in progress shows where I'd just get up there for an hour and I'd have like a plan and a script, but essentially vibing.
See where your brain is going to take you.
And I mean, just really uncomfortable to charge people for tickets to that. But that's what I did. And also I have a director, a producer and stuff. So, and stage manager that I would like talk to about it, and we'd all work on it together, and I'd like invite friends. They'd be like, this sucks. I'd be like, that's so true. I'll do better next time.
Yeah, right.
These different ways, you know, like, so it was like a, like anything, just like a constant, you know, self-hatred sort of forcing you to work on your own material. So you don't go through the shame and embarrassment of performing it again.
It's like therapy, so but you're badly. Making people pay you.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure, which I think is actually really healthy and good.
For sure.
And that's why I came, and that's why I come to New York.
Yeah. Because you want that really expensive therapy. That's what you really, that's what you were looking for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Were you doing, were by the time you hit Edinburgh, were, was the show like kind of locked, or were you still like, it was still, you were still working it?
It was pretty locked because this, I mean, it's not, it's a stand-up show essentially. It's like a comedy show, but it's also, it's got like a narrative, and it's got like different like bits, and there's lighting cues, and there's songs, and that it's like a pretty structured thing.
Yeah.
It's less of like a, I don't like just do sort of like 10 minute bits and then be like, thanks for coming out, guys. It's
right.
Like a, it sort of builds in a way. So yeah, sort of like a play. Well, that makes it sound so boring.
No, but honestly, I was going to say, like, I feel like that's, and maybe I'm totally like just not educated, but it feels like in the last like 10 years, there's a lot more of that happening, right? Like even with something like, I mean, even Hannah Gadsby, which is more, that is stand-up in the sense that it's just like, there's no songs, you know what I mean? It's not a lot of lighting cues.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is narrative. I mean, obviously you get like a Mike Birbiglia, which is like super narrative, but like I just saw Kate Berlant's show. There's a lot, I feel like there's a lot of that going on where people that are doing comedy are like, no, I want to do something that's a little bit more well-rounded, you know what I mean? Or like Nate even, that's like really,
Though, I mean, all of those people, I mean, I think that it kind of came out of Edinburgh, the festival, because people, you have to do an hour and you have to make it like, there are so many comics doing that hour for the whole month, night after night, and you have to make it feel more important than the other ones. So it just gets, every year it just gets more and more heightened. And all of those shows, like Nate was a massive, Natalie did that, the Fringe, and that was like a massive Fringe show. And and Nanette as well was like the comedy festival circuit vibe. But yeah, that I think it is, and I think Mike Birbiglia also was sort of inspired by some British comics who were doing all sort of like narrative storytelling kind of shows. It's funny seeing the cycles of it as well, because I think after Nanette, people were like, oh, okay, so we can't really do the trauma thing anymore. So
right, that she's capitalized on that one. Yeah.
She's done, yeah, she's made a lot of money out of trauma. So what are we gonna do now? So I think in a way that the show I'm doing is kind of a response to that kind of vibe. Cause you get in the after Nanette, like immediately afterwards, you got a lot of people being like, my show is kind of like Nanette, except instead of being gay, it's about my dead dad, whatever, you know, that kind of thing. And it just got to the point where it's so ridiculous, the kind of things that people would, you know, 45 minutes in, it's like, the jokes are over, time for my speech.
Time, right, exactly, and, TED Talk.
Yeah, TED Talk time. And some of the stuff that people would try and like just sort of shoehorn into being like actually really difficult for them in their life would be like, my parents actually almost got divorced once. And it's like, that's a 10-minute speech at the end of the show.
Yeah, that's the trauma.
Are you kidding? Are you kidding? Or like, some of my ancestors were Italian. And it's like, what are you talking about? So yeah, I think there are a few shows. I haven't seen Cable Lance.
Oh my God.
The off Broadway one. She did it in London and I saw that, but I think that was quite a like rough, like work in progress version. I mean, she's the best comedian in the world, of course. But I think as far as I can tell, that's kind of a parody of those,
very much so.
Earnest. Yeah. And yes. I mean, my show is also kind of a parody, like a sort of send up of those.
That's
like,
what I was going to ask. Yeah.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. It's like the show is kind of, based off the fact that in 2020, I was going to go to the Fringe with an hour of stand up storytelling comedy. about how like my life is so hard and I've been a victim of homophobia.
Okay, is that true? Happened. Were you really gonna?
That's true. Yeah, I was gonna do like a breakup show about like I had a really hard breakup and also plot twist, I'm gay the whole time. And everyone's crying, people crying in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is gonna change lives.
I'm really gonna make an impact. The pandemic happened.
Yeah, exactly. The pandemic happened and I was like, in a way, thank God, but the pandemic in a way. So someone's gonna clip that up and it's gonna be awful. But the one good thing about the pandemic is that it stopped me from doing that show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And instead, what's ended up happening is that the show that I'm doing is kind of a parody of that original show and like a parody of the kind of person who would think that was like an important thing to do.
Which is like you.
Which is me. It turns out. Yeah, it's like a self-parody. It's like a really, really harsh self-criticism.
When did the switch happen? Like, when did you have the realization that you were like, wait a second, it's much more entertaining and funnier to parody this thing than to actually earnestly do the thing?
Well, I think I had that like classic pandemic experience of being like just locked in a room with your own thoughts and also just made very aware on a day-to-day basis of the extreme luck and privilege that I experienced since birth. And just sort of to contrast with that, the kind of like self-indulgent, self-pitying stand-up show that I was going to perform suddenly felt like so insane and funny.
I just love the idea that you had this hour of material. Like, you'd worked it, you were ready.
There are bits of it in the show, but I've managed to sort of wriggle out of responsibility for it by being like, by sort of making fun of it in the show.
Yeah.
So in the show, it's like, I'm kind of a character. It's like sort of stand up and it's like, I'm heightened. And you're kind of meant to be off-putting. But a lot of like some of the anecdotes in the show I was performing in 2020 as just like straight up earnest anecdotal material.
That's a fun Crazy. Game to try to like it's, sort out.
Yeah, yeah.
Be like, that feels like that was in the show before.
Yes. Yeah. It's but pretty it was obvious. Earnest.
It's obvious. Okay, good.
It's pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious, good. I have to say.
So you had been to the Fringe before, though, before 2020.
I'd done sketch shows with friends. When I was at university, we'd go and do a dumb sketch show for a month. So I did that for 3 years.
Oh my gosh.
And it was 3 years in a row. And it was always like, it's always like the most intense, hellish nightmare, but also like the best like months of anyone's life. And then you end the month being like, I'm never doing this again. And then sort of January rolls around. You're like, how am I going to get a venue?
Right. How does that even like, I don't even know anything about, I mean, I know a couple people over here that have gone and done Fringe shows or shows that have come over from Fringe, but it feels like it's so much more common like overseas that people are like, oh yeah, I go every year. We do a show every year.
It's less and less common because it's so expensive now to do it and people need so much
money. Right, because you self-produce.
Money.
Right.
And you have to pay so, and the like even just rent and making flyers and stuff. And there are so many shows. Tickets are so expensive. Food's so expensive. It's all just like insane. But there is definitely a culture of like, there has been a culture of like, you go every year, you take your new show every year and you try and have a good Fringe. And then it can, if it goes really well, then
you never know.
You're straight to the top. Yeah.
Yeah, baby. Straight to New York.
Straight to New York.
Here you are. So wait, so you were doing comedy before you were doing stand-up though. So like you had done, you were doing sketch in college and stuff like that. But were you doing?
I was doing sketch.
Were you doing stand-up at the time? Or?
I was doing stand-up, but like, yeah, like much more traditional. Like now, the stand-up I do now is like very rarely about like actual stuff. It's like the stand-up in the beginning was very like confessional. It was like, everything's got to be true. I'm doing stand-up about like
my relationships, about my sex life, about like,
and then at a certain point I was like, this is so crazy because I'm not in a relationship and I don't have sex and I like that nothing funny happens to me. Do you know what I mean? Like constantly excavating for laughter, like the one time I've had sex in the last six months or something. Oh, and it's like, what? At a certain point, you just go like, what am I doing? What's happening to my brain?
Yeah.
That I'm
scraping the bottom of the barrel of your life. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the gap, the really like terrifying thing is sometimes like something bad will happen to you and you really notice how quickly after it you go, maybe this could be something.
That's like, so interesting.
And you start off and the gap is like maybe 2 weeks. 2 weeks later, you're like, oh yeah, maybe that's actually funny in the end. And then by the time you've been doing stand-up for like a year, you're like, it's immediate.
That feels like semi-healthy.
Yeah.
Pseudo-healthy. You know what I mean?
Okay, someone needs to rewatch Nanette. Oh yeah. My God.
Like, it's like, I understand.
You are not listening.
The processing, I feel like, is helpful, but maybe... Yeah.
It can be, for sure. For sure, but I literally wasn't having enough experiences. Like, there were no experiences.
You were searching out pain. You're like searching out trauma. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Just so you can have things to talk about.
So now it's sort of about nothing. Am I selling it well? It's kind of
so
about
well.
Nothing.
It's really, yeah. It's
kind of about nothing.
But so it's like it's a character now. It's less earnest, and now it's more of a character that you're playing, which I guess all stand up is.
Yeah.
But it feels like now it's even more heightened.
I mean, it is totally, it's me, but it's like a, I guess it's like a, it's like what I fear that I like, you know, when you have a hangover and you're like thinking, you can see yourself in a third person at the party, drunk, saying something, you're like, oh, I'm maybe the worst person who's ever lived. It's like that for an hour.
That is so well said. And now I'm thinking about other comedians and I'm like, oh my God, that's exactly what they're doing. It's like the worst version of themselves.
Yeah. Cause really, I mean, that's the therapy of it, is like you say the worst thing you've ever thought and then people laugh and you're like, oh wait, maybe it's fine that I'm like this. maybe that's what they mean when they're laughing at what I'm saying.
They're like, oh yeah, keep going, keep doing that.
If anything, be worse.
Yeah.
And it's great. Yeah, it's very healthy.
Dig deeper. And I wonder, because I was thinking about this too the other day, that like, in order to get up on stage, I've been seeing a lot more stand-up lately, and in order to get up and do that, there has to be a level of like self-belief or belief in yourself and confidence that is hard for me to really fathom. Like, I don't want to say like it's courageous or it's brave, because I feel like
I think you should. It would mean a lot to me if you did.
I think you're brave. I really do think you're courageous and brave. But do you know what I'm saying? Like, it feels like there's this like confidence level, which that feels like such an empty word in what I'm trying to say. But you have to be willing to just be like, okay, I'm, or at least somewhat believe, like, I'm good enough for people to listen to what I have to say.
The word I'm looking for is delusion, but also like there's a desperation. And
I think that's a good word for it. I think those are both really good words for it too.
Yeah. And I think that there's also like, I mean, there's something so thrilling about bombing on stage. And I think every comic that I know, you know, you obviously hate to bomb, it's so humiliating, but it's like, it's incredible, because there's some level, I think anyone who does stand-up comedy kind of feels like what they deserve is to get on stage, say the thing that they think is the funniest thing in the world, and then for everyone to tell them to go die. And that, like, that's the kind of
like masochism, right? Yeah,
it's a masochism. That's like a death drive kind of thing where you're like, I'm gonna get up there and I'm gonna say this stuff and no one's gonna get it and they're gonna hate me, and you know what, that's exactly that's kind of
that's
right.
What I want,
that feels right to me, that's what I want from these people.
Every stand-up has like bombed in a room of people and then come off stage and being like, those people are fucking idiots. Oh my God, I'm sorry.
You can swear as much as you want.
Okay, is that fine?
Yes. Yes. So, yes. No, we're not NPR. It's really okay.
I don't know about the culture in this country yet. I don't know. I was on the phone to my friend, obviously, massive cultural difference. The C word.
Oh, I love the C word.
Screaming. I'm on the phone to my friend screaming it down the phone. Everyone in Greenwich Village and looking at me like I'm committing a hate crime. I'm like, I'm sorry, can you not hear my accent? It's fine for me to say this. Yeah.
Can't you hear? That's what it gives me permission.
I'm an intellectual. Listen to my accent. I can say whatever I want.
Don't you see my turtleneck?
Literally.
Yeah, that's so interesting though, that like there is a level of like you, or at least you have, I guess to be, I don't want to say successful, but like in order to like get through it, there has to be some kind of part of you that wants to bomb. Because if you don't want that, then you're kind of setting yourself up to fail.
Totally. Also, I feel like being a comedian on some level, what you're doing is you're going, I'm an idiot. You're getting upstage and being like, I'm the stupidest guy ever. Huh. You want people to not take you seriously, like just like this fundamental human level. That's a very weird thing to want.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I'm so fascinated by the form. Like, it's been so interesting seeing, and I've actually been seeing a lot of queer comedians recently, which has been really, really fun because. Yeah. I don't know. It feels, I mean, as a queer person, it just like feels like nice to hear. I don't even say myself represented, but like the community is like thriving. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we're funny people.
We're funny.
Funny people.
Yeah.
I was literally at a comedy show with my friend the other day, and it was a very straight lineup of comedians. And at the end, my friend turns to me and is like, I think all of these straight people have come here. Because when they go for dinner, they don't laugh. And they come here to, like, get their laugh. Whereas we're laughing the whole time.
We're laughing always. We laugh a lot.
A lot. And then you come to the comedy show to kind of scream more than anything.
Right. Yes.
It's like there's this sort of higher level of laughter that you access that... You know, a lot of these people, these straight people, they're just doing like a bargain basement kind of. That's a good observation.
A chuckle, you know? Right? Yeah, right.
Whereas you go to a queer show and it's like people just sort of, I don't know, screaming out comedy songs and everyone in the crowd just like losing their mind.
And you can tell who's strange. In the audience who's straight and who's queer too. You
for
can
sure.
tell.
I've performed to many straight people, I'm ashamed to say, who truly, because in Edinburgh especially, I was in like a tiny little box. I could see every individual audience member's face the entire time.
Oh my God.
And just, you could tell when like a boyfriend's been dragged along or whatever. And just faces just like wide eyed, like,
why am I here?
Get me out of here.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to break them by the end. It's kind of fun.
I was going to say, it's kind of, and it's fun to call that out. You know what I mean? It's fun to be able to be like, you don't want to be here right now.
You don't want to be here. It's not for you. And that's fine.
Right. And that's the thing. It's not for you. It's this actually isn't for you. But that's what I think I've been loving so many of these queer comedians lately, or even the ones that are
queer adjacent. Yeah.
Correct.
And that's why I'm so excited to be. I mean, that's a big reason why I'm so excited to be in New York, because the comedy scene here is gay even when it isn't. It feels like, well, like especially the alt scene.
Oh my gosh.
It's so massive. And in the UK, it's like not
really
in the same way. Yeah, there's not. I mean, this is the thing that I'm most scared about, but also most excited about here, is that I feel like that the stuff that I'm doing, comedy wise, feels like it very much fits into a scene that already exists. Whereas in the UK, I'm like I'm being freaky on stage. They're going,
so interesting, right? Like, okay, so how would you define, and this is a really, this might be like the worst question.
Oh my God.
How would you define that scene? Like, what is the quote unquote alt scene? What is that?
Oh, I don't know. That's just like a style of it. I guess what I'm saying is like, in the comedy shows that I do in the UK, I'm coming on stage and literally something as simple as in glittery eye makeup and like tight, tiny shorts and big black boots.
And people are like, oh my God.
And people are like, what is this? Whereas when I get on stage like that tomorrow, like in New York, people will be like, okay, like what?
That's so interesting.
Is this part of the bit? Like, where is this? Are you going somewhere after? It's so, you have to try so much harder.
Yeah, right.
To make an impression or to seem provocative in any way.
Yeah.
Whereas in London, there's not this kind of like, there's not the same level of alternative cabaret at like comedy.
That's so interesting. Because I feel like I'm trying to think about theater, because that's like really my main, I mean, we can do music too, but theater. I feel like there, it goes both ways, and that like there are some shows that have come over from London that you're like, oh my God, this is so innovative and different, and the Americans are like eating it up because it's so off the sort of normal Broadway with a B. But at the same time, I feel like there are some productions that, and I guess I'm saying the same thing, that there are shows here that don't necessarily work here, but they go to London and people are like, nom, 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 nom,
for
nom,
sure.
nom, nom, nom.
Yeah. It's interesting. I have watched that happen in both ways.
Yeah.
And pardon me, on like on a more detached sort of, sort of outside of my own body way, I'm like, I wonder which one this show will be.
I'm curious. Right. I just want to know.
I guess we'll see. We'll see if will people like this. I have no idea.
Do you have like do you have previews, or is there like an official opening, or is tomorrow like this is it?
Tomorrow is the one preview essentially, and then Thursday is the official
opening.
Like, yeah. Get the price in. Do you know what I mean? Get them in.
Just come
Why
on.
Not?
Let's go. Bring
Why not? I still don't know the lines. I'm not used to the space. Get it in here.
You're a liar. You know the lines. I know you know the lines. And this is not the last place you're doing it. You're going where?
I'm
Australia?
Goddamn Melbourne. Yeah, I've had the most insane, the schedule in the next until May is so crazy. I do the 26 shows in New York, and then I fly home to London. I have 3 days
strictly
off.
Strictly limited engagement.
Yeah.
Only 26.
It is. Sorry.
Kind of fierce.
Kind of great. Yeah. No, there's not going to be an extension, you guys. There can't be.
Can't be.
So
Got to go to London.
That's what I'm saying.
Got to go to London for 3 days. And then
London for 3 days. Then I do a week of shows in London. And then I have 1 day off. And then I fly to Melbourne. And then I do a month of shows there. And then I do a couple of shows in Sydney. And then it's May. And I'm like, what? I'm gonna be jet lagged as hell.
For sure. Are you tired of the show yet?
I've had a bunch of time off it, so I'm not right now.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think by the time it hits sort of April 28th, and I'm doing my 300th show of the year at the Melbourne Comedy Festival to 4 gay Australians, I think that's gonna be like a low moment.
You'll be like, okay. Be like,
yeah. I do my final show in Sydney to like 3 people. I'm like, I've done 100,000 performances of this show.
Great. I'm good.
Which also the show is like just a brutal character assassination of myself. So just to wrench myself through that every day. Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
So doing this and then going on the road and literally traveling everywhere. Is this, for lack of a better phrase, like dream come true? Is this what you wanted to be doing, or is this what you want to be doing? Like,
yeah, total dream come true. Okay. I mean, especially this New York bit, which is so weird that this has happened, because it's very unusual, and it's like a lot of things have to fall into place to visa wise and production company wise,
oh my God,
especially
right.
Like all of this stuff. It's like such a
they don't make it easy.
They don't make it easy. It felt so unlikely until the week that it was put on sale.
Mm.
So I'm just like thrilled. I'm also just like, apart from anything, I'm like, how badly can it go? I've got an apartment.
I've got a
free apartment in Greenwich Village.
Right. Like
yesterday, I went to the duplex until 3 a.m. and then I came home with a slice. Do you know what I mean?
You're really living the New York queer, gay life. The duplex till 3 a.m.
Oh no, my show's going badly. I'll see you at Marie's Crisis.
Exactly,
you know what I mean?
Right, yes.
Like, who cares?
That's
on some level.
And at some level.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, wait for the sort of the brutal one-star New York Times review.
Forget
and
it.
I throw myself into the Hudson.
No,
but it feels on some level. It's like, I feel like I've already won.
Yeah.
I would say everything else is a bonus.
But that's good. I mean, that's a good perspective to have. It feels like that's like it's a healthy mindset to come into this with. It feels.
This is purely me. I'm sort of saying this out loud so that I start to believe it.
Like, 100%.
I'm screaming at myself in the mirror every day.
Like, you probably won't like me saying this, but like what you're doing is not easy. You know, I have so much. I really do. I have so much respect for, like I said to you before, like the form and the art of comedy, because I just don't think it's very easy. I to me, it's like dramatic acting is like kind of easier than comedy. Like,
yeah, I think, do you know what? I mean, curveball, it's all not super hard.
Yeah. Okay. True. Okay. True. True. I'll take that. True.
It's not
true.
I mean, I what have I done today? I had a turkey club in a diner, and now I'm doing this.
Yeah. Right.
And that's it.
And then you have rehearsal tonight.
Kinda.
Yeah. Kinda. Just a run.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Will I give it 100%? No.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
No, because there's no audience there.
Right, so you're like, I'm going to phone it in tonight. Yeah,
I'm not getting into makeup for a run.
No,
kidding?
Forget it.
I'm asking someone to go get me a water. You know, it's very easy stuff. It's pretty simple. And all I had to do was like sort of, I don't know, write a couple of jokes about like how I'm a bitch. Like, great.
Good, got it.
The dream.
Okay, but like, were you always funny? Yeah. Were you always...
No. No, I'm barely funny now. I tried so hard for so many years. I was not funny at all. No, I was a massive comedy fan. That was my deal. I was a massive comedy nerd fan.
Nerd. Comedy
obsessive.
Nerd.
Yeah, like real freaky kind of.
Okay, tell me, like, give me what are the nerdy things? Like,
oh, I could... I mean, I like have fly... The first time I went to Edinburgh, was 2013, I think.
Okay.
I kept every flyer. I wrote a review of each show I saw with a star rating. How old was I? I must have been like 13. No, 15. 15. And just obsessive. I saw Bo Burnham there. Lost my absolute mind. Started writing little comedy, like raps in the back of my like a Spanish textbook.
Yes.
At school. Like just truly like the worst stuff you've ever seen in your life. Offensive, terrible stuff. Really bad. Like that kind of thing. Just going by myself to comedy shows like 3-4 times a week.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Or like with my mom. Like just lonely.
You're like, take me to a comedy show.
Yeah, that was, I mean, but yeah, totally. And all of those people are like famous. All the people we saw, like 4 people in the crowd, are all so famous now. And they would be on stage being like, are you guys a couple? And I'd be like, no, it's my mom. And also, by the way, I'm 12. Like, just, it's so weird. I did that for such a long time. I just went to see comedy and loved it so much. And I was like, I would love to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really studied and very not natural. It's not like a, you know, I didn't come out of the womb just sort of just cracking jokes.
Because some people do. Some people are naturally funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, pulling faces. Yeah, some people are really naturally funny. Like pulling faces and doing little, like they have like a physical thing. But I hope part of what the show is just like a, you know, someone extremely desperate to be considered like a comedic genius, but having like no natural ability at all.
Sell it, baby.
Or just the one who's like watched a lot. That, you know, that very cynical thing, which I think is so prevalent now, where you see like an some kind of artist, like of any genre, that is very clearly like their stuff is not coming from like an authentic place. It's coming from like I've watched a bunch of stuff that's popular,
mm-hmm.
and I've triangulated the most sellable version of like what I could produce. You get it in music all the time.
I feel like that in music all the time.
Yeah. It's like, this kind of stuff, this could maybe go be a TikTok sound.
Yep.
Like, and it's just like the chorus over and over. It starts with a chorus. It's the chorus over and over again.
And it's just a chorus.
It's just one chorus. And you're like, okay, what is going on? But that kind of perspective on creativity, I think is like simultaneously so sad, but also so funny. It's so funny to sit down and just start writing like, like with like pen behind your ear, you walk up to the easel and you're like, what am I going to create today? I guess a TikTok sound. I just think it's so funny.
Okay, but
and
in essence,
it happens in comedy the whole time as well.
I was going to say, but isn't that what you do in essence?
Yeah. Yeah.
You sit down at a laptop or your notes app on a phone.
Yeah.
And you're like,
what can I do at a comedy club, record it like in shitty quality from the back of the room and clip it up?
Yep.
Like, what could that be? And that's very, but I think it's funny when people do that and then simultaneously sort of perform the idea that they're quite like sort of a creative genius, or like a very like sincere, earnest, my art comes from deep within me. Because you get these people who are doing that sort of TikTok stand-up stuff, and then they'll come to the Edinburgh Fringe for the show about like, I don't know, grief or whatever. It's like, maybe pick one. Do you know what I mean?
Pick a lane. Why don't you?
Yeah, pick a lane. And yeah, that's also what the show's about. It's like someone who was so clearly very focused on immediate commercial success and hopping on whatever trends, having no real like artistic outlook or beliefs or opinions, and just trying to just churn out something that's going to like do the numbers.
I hate to say this, but also, you know what, I'm gonna be vulnerable for a second and tell you that I think that's really prevalent today. And then I was like, I kind of feel that way sometimes,
for sure.
And I was gonna say, like, is that in you too? Like, I feel like it's totally inescapable in the culture we live in now.
Well, like, yeah, I mean, I all of the stuff that is in the show is total like that. It all comes from like stuff that I recognize in myself. I would hate to be one of those comics who's like doing a satire of young people these days, like from a distance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's all just like, I do this thing that I think is so weird and ironic and funny and kind of like callous and you know, like uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I totally like the thing that really gets me is, well, actually in the run up to this New York show, even like the posts that I have done, the self promotion that I have,
well said. That does take some strength, honey.
The DMs that I have been sending someone verified
that I've met one time. Yeah, no, that's another level.
For sure.
Yeah.
No, but it's like, but then you're like, you have to do it. On some, there's a part of you that's like, well, I do need people to come.
Yeah.
I do. It is necessary, but also it's so bleak.
It's so bleak. Yeah.
No, it's so bleak. To put a quote from a review of your own show on your own Instagram story.
But
I'm doing one today as well. I have to do a post today. Like there's like a whole little timetable right up to the show and you have to do a post.
But that is, I've been very impressed by how you
by my content.
Yes,
thank you.
Because there is this line that it is like self-promotion but also self-degradation, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it has. I feel like, thank God, because of what the show is, there's a level of a get out jail free card where at any moment I could turn around and be like, that's actually the character speaking. So that's not me. So don't worry, you guys. I'm actually very humble, down to earth kind of guy. I would never post a glowing review to my own Instagram. Mm. That's actually the parody character.
Right.
Yeah. And also, I guess, because some of the reviews are like quite funny in themselves, that's been helpful. Like because the show is essentially like, you know, an hour of spending an hour with like one of the worst people you ever met in your life. Like, and all the reviews are like, the opening paragraph is like, Leo Reich is the most shallow, narcissistic, privileged gay freak you've ever met. And that's been fun to sort of like pick out the worst.
Oh my God, it's been so, those are
quotes
so
and just
good.
Like throw them up there.
Yes.
I think it's
Gen Z trash.
Like,
you're like,
yeah,
thank
five
you.
Stars.
Yeah, right.
I'm saying it's funny.
But it feels like, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, it feels like building something like a piece or a show like this. I know you love like a piece.
I love that.
Like this, it is maybe helpful in not falling into the trap of wanting to create viral, clippable content.
Yeah, I mean that it has been on a separate level kind of annoying because sometimes people will be like, "Oh, do you want to do this show where you do 5 minutes?" And I'm like, "Well, not a yes, but also no, because none of it massively makes sense outside of the context of the show."
Right.
That I have done a couple of TV spots in the UK,
like 10 minute or five like chunks.
Yeah, just like little chunks.
Yeah,
and it's always so funny because it's impossible to get across the kind of the sort of persona in the same sort of fleshed out way. So it becomes a much simpler, more like brutalized version of what I hope that I'm doing in the longer show. And stuff that hopefully over the course of an hour becomes ironic. If you just see it, the joke on its own, it's like, oh, is this what you actually think? I did some jokes on, there's some jokes in the show about like, just like taking the piss out of old people, essentially, like the older generation, whatever. Yeah. And hopefully in the show, it's like slightly cleverer than this, but when I did those on a TV show and I got like loads of replies being like, this is just ageist.
And you're like, you don't
really ageist.
Get it.
I'm like, no, I'm mocking myself, you guys.
you're not deep enough to understand.
I'm the butt of the joke. Which is always, you always know you're a good comedian when you blame the audience. And you can, you can take, that's a tip for free.
Thank you.
If you're starting out, anyone listening, if you're starting out, always blame the audience.
Always, it's always on them. It's always on them.
Yeah. I'm saying that as a joke. I do that. I'm completely serious in a way.
So you're not funny in real life? You're not, you don't?
No. Is that not coming across? I feel like, I know, I'm all right. I'm like a chill hand.
Yeah, like, you're like, it's chill. Right.
All right. Yeah, I'm okay.
I only asked because, like, I grew up in a house where my family was like, you're not funny.
Really? No.
They were like, your brother is funny. He's funny, but you are not
funny. You're not funny.
And so there is, like, an internalized belief that's like, oh, I don't have any comedic value. I don't have, you know what I mean? I don't have anything. And so if I'm ever doing anything where I'm, like, working for laughs, like, it was comforting to hear you say, like, I'm working for it. Like, I am really, like, squeezing as much as I can because I don't believe internally that I have comedic.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
100%. I sometimes so skeptical that anyone feels like that, but they do, I think. But I don't know. No, I agree. I was never funny. Like, I was never the funny kid. I was a very shy, like, I was very shy for most of the bit. And then at a certain point, it was just like, then quite mean.
It turns like that. Yeah, that's a pipeline. Yeah. That's a very common pipeline.
Totally. Yeah, that's kind of the gay experience, I guess.
Yes.
Very shy and then very mean.
Very mean.
And then you sort of find a middle ground, which is funny.
Mm-hmm. And then you either go into marketing or comedy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Or, in my case, kind of both.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, a lot of publicity for my end. I don't know. I think that the funny thing is, there are so few people who are going, I just naturally feel so funny.
Funny all the time.
You know, I'm not trying at all. I think that whenever anyone says something funny is the result of, like, the biggest act of, like, effortful desperation, which is what, so that's why I love it so much. It's like, it's such a vulnerable thing to do, to put so much effort in. And making someone laugh is, like, so hard that you have to really try, and that's such like a freaky thing to do, especially in a casual conversation. Yes. Try and make people laugh.
Yes.
So crazy.
Yes.
I love it. I love it when people do it.
It's like sometimes a defense mechanism, and sometimes
it can sometimes be, like, totally unbearable when people are doing it. You're just like, please
stop. Oh my
let's
gosh.
Chill out.
Yep.
But yeah. I was hanging out with some people yesterday who I'd never met before after a show, and I was with my friend. We were just like, you know, riffing, for want of a better word, and there's something so thrilling about everyone's just like, okay, yeah, we're gonna really try and be funny now, like, for this little bit of a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just, like, really put ourselves out there and just, like, and see what works.
Yeah, right.
So there's something so sweet about it. It's like little kids, like, playing pretend.
Yeah,
where you're like, we all have to commit to this, otherwise it's going to be really embarrassing.
Right, for all of us.
For everyone. Or for so one we're all going to do it.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
We just met, and we're actually building a world together. That's what I was saying. I was sobbing in the corner. I wasn't contributing. I was just sobbing, crying, just being just like, this is so beautiful.
Yeah, you're like,
how the community coming together in this way.
That is me. Yeah. That is me. That's me. That's the cringe in me, is that I'm the person in the group where I'm not afraid to admit. I'm the one that I'm like, you guys, this is so fun.
Yeah. If you're the guy who, like, after the laughter died out, and you're like, guys, we should start a podcast. Well,
I mean,
it speaks for itself. I mean, look around.
It really does. And also, you know, like, I, on the other end of that spectrum is like, and again, this is why I have so much admiration, is because it's like math to me. It's like, it is so calculated. I mean, sure, there's the riffing that happens, and, like, that's a whole other sort of camp. But when it comes to, like, building a show or a 5-minute set, it is like math, that it's like you need to know the beats and the timing, because if you say the quote unquote punchline or you tell the story in a different rhythm or pacing, the laughs are going to fall in different places.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's if there's something sort of mysterious, kind of, there's this the mystical vibe. It's very nice. I don't know that you can really dive deep into that kind of stuff. People write to you about, where does laughter even come from, man? Is it maths? Or is it just God? You know, that kind of, yeah, there's
yeah,
a lot
me.
Of that. There's
that's
a
me.
Lot of that
that's
out there.
That's me, that's me.
I mean, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. But I think if you're a comic and you start going down that, if you start thinking too much about it, it's a really good way of making yourself the least funny person who's ever lived.
Right, if it gets too complicated.
You see people with the maths angle, like there are comics who have like the maths brain mm-hmm. going, and then we've got to end on a hard consonant because hard consonants are punchy and funny.
Oh no,
it's
no,
like,
no.
Okay, what? Like, what are you talking about?
No.
Are you okay? You know, they're all, oh, you know, there are all of these words for the different kinds of jokes where you like read Freud about it or whatever, and it just doesn't end well.
No,
just on the level of the material, it won't end well. I don't think.
Okay, two questions: have you ever watched YouTube videos or read books on comedy and like the art of comedy and the form and shape of comedy in your in your studying and education?
Yeah, I did. I did an English degree, and I went hard on some comedy stuff. Yeah, I did like a paper on it. It was fun. It was fun, but it was also like, I don't know what the hell's going on here. That's what everyone said. If you read all the theory, it's like that a lot of, most of it is just going like, I don't know what the hell's going on here. Or someone will come up with a theory of like, when people laugh, it's actually about the juxtaposition of a big idea coming into contact with aspect of daily life. And then it will be like, okay, that kind of makes sense. And then it'll be footnote. Apart from in all of these examples, like all of these 100,000 examples where it's not that. You're like, okay.
You're like, so...
Right. So you don't know. And it's kind of nice. It's quite a sort of a rare mystery.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have done it. Again, comedy nerd, massive.
Right,
like, right. I'm reading the interviews. I'm listening to the...
listening to the podcasts.
I'm listening to the podcasts where people are like, so... The thing about craft is that, you know, I'm doing that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Which I think is fun. And especially if you're, like you said, if you're a fan of comedy, if you're a nerd about comedy, then that is like delicious. That's like really fun.
Totally.
You know?
I think that you get to a point though where you're like, if you listen to people who are actually the really good comics, I think. You'll listen to their episode of the podcast where they talk about their craft.
Uh-huh.
And it will come down to the same thing, which is, I don't know, man. I just have like an intuitive sense of like, I'll just sort of see, notice something and be like, that's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
You're like, that's
all it is. And there's something very telling about the stage of your comedy life where you're reading all this stuff, you're listening to all the interviews and stuff, and you're really just trying to like crack the code. It's like, all the signs are pointing to you're not that funny yet. Like you don't know, you just can't
right.
see the stuff. Like you're not following your intuition. You're not sort of don't have the confidence in your own sense of humor.
Yeah.
So you're trying to sort of, like externalize that and be like, so the maths of it is if I say this and then I do the switch and then I do a rhyme, then that's gonna hit hard and everyone will love me. And it's like, well, no, obviously not.
And then there's a turn for some people, I imagine, that happens that you do start trusting your intuition and you don't necessarily need all that.
Yeah. Well, it's like the nightmare of any creative, of trying to like sort of follow in the footsteps of any like creative mm-hmm. people that you like is that you'll be like, how did this person come up with this sort of groundbreaking?
Yeah.
And an individual approach to the genre that I am trying to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, it's not by copying someone.
That's right, exactly. It's not by studying.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So,
that's so true. That's so interesting and so true that it's like, you have to sort of release it at some point. You have to sort of like let it go in order to.
Yeah, to be like genuinely good. Or you could just be like me and you could really like triangulate hard. You just like watch a lot of stuff. You watch a lot of stuff. You should like take a little bit from other stuff and then you sort of pretend that that's like a part of the show.
Right, exactly. Right.
You're like, I see the point of it. The point of the show is that he's not actually a genius.
Mm,
that's actually the point of it. And that's why it's so clever.
Interesting. Yeah. Like you turn it on its head. Mm,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everyone's clapping.
And there's a lot of trial and error too. I mean, that's the other thing, especially with comedies that, and I find with music too, that there's a lot of trial and error. Like you have to bomb a little bit in order to.
Yeah, I feel like that. I find it very. The idea of doing music so scary because how do you know if they liked it? You don't.
By how much they applaud? Like, not really. You know what I mean? Like you're like, oh,
I hate to tell you this. They're gonna applaud.
That's right. Exactly.
They're gonna applaud because they feel like they should.
Like, oh, he did. Oh, God.
I've bombed harder than you could ever imagine. Then still applaud at the end.
Right, but they don't laugh.
But they don't laugh.
But they do not laugh.
But in the songs, they're not meant to laugh. They're meant to what?
Right,
feel?
Exactly.
How do you quantify that?
The whoops at the end. You're like, depending on how the level of woo-woo, you know what I mean?
Terrifying.
Like, no, terrifying. Not a good gauge. Like, there's not really a good gauge.
I always think about, like films as well, where you're, like, you're watching, you're at the premiere of your movie, you're on, like, a director, you're, like, looking around, like, did you love the subtle texture of that shot? I'll never know.
Did you like the cinematography of that moment?
I will never know about that. I guess. So like, I'll read. Maybe you read the review and you're like, "Well, the Guardian liked it." So I guess that means everyone liked it.
I guess that means everyone did.
Doesn't.
I don't know. Don't go read Rotten Tomatoes. So last question is: Who do you love? Like, who are you loving right now? What comedians out there or acts in general? You know, are doing stuff that you're like really, really into.
That's a great question. Also, great question for Valentine's Day. Who am I loving right now?
Oh, wow. I didn't even mean to do that. Yes, I did.
No one. But also, comedy-wise, so many people. That's why I'm so excited to be here because all of my favorite people. Cable Ant is, like, to me, the best comedian in the world. So great.
Oh, my God. That show
life-changing experience to watch her. Catherine Cohen, who's just that, she's just done a UK tour actually, which is it feels weird that I'm in New York and she's
swapped.
In Birmingham or whatever. She's great, so good. I still my 15 year old self is desperate to say Bo Burnham and be the most obvious person of all time, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Loads of people though. Rory Scovel. I really like Charlie Bardet. Do you know him? He's Mm-mm. really funny. Really funny. That's like really funny writing, not anything. If you've heard of such a thing. Analog. Who else? I've like suddenly lost for names. Meg Stolter.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
Friend, you know what I mean? Friends of yours that you love that you're like, oh, this person is talented.
Yeah. Friends in the like UK scene for sure. Check out Anya Magliana, she's amazing. Check out Bella Hall, check out Lara Ricotte, she's over here at the moment. She's really, really funny. She won the Best Newcomer Award in Edinburgh. Sam Campbell, who won the main show award. He's so funny. They were my flatmates in Edinburgh. They're hilarious. They'll be out here soon, I think. I think Sam's planning to come out for a bit as well. Loads of people, loads and loads of people. I love comedy, man. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the stuff.
Me too.
I'm not bored of it. Some comics will just absolutely nothing worse to them than going to see a comedy show. And I'm sucking that stuff
down.
When
it's good, it's so good.
And guess what? When it's bad, that's even better.
That's right.
That's even better to me. I would pay twice as much to
watch
see something
bomb.
So bad.
Yeah, right.
I love it. I love that stuff.
It
makes me feel good about myself.
I was going to say,
it does. But it's also like the really nice thing about Edinburgh, actually, and actually that's a good sort of topper to saying all those people, is that I have seen every single one of those people I just mentioned bomb in my life. Like total silence bomb. And there's that. It's so good. That's my if I had one bit of advice for anyone who's like too nervous to get on the stage, blah, 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 is if you go and see your favorite comedian enough times, you will see them bomb and it's thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
It's like incredible. I'll never, you know, Kate Burland playing to absolute silence in a tiny closet in Edinburgh.
I could not want anything more.
It's way funnier as well. Me screaming in the corner like right. Free in my like quote t-shirt, being like, "Hey, yeah," but really like total like just blank faces.
Yeah, wow.
And you just go, "Oh, okay." So this will happen. Like if you do stuff something that's really good, that's not enough. That's never enough for everyone.
Yeah. It's never enough. And
never enough. That's the energy I'm taking into this run.
That's really right.
Some people won't like it. And do you know what? That doesn't mean I'm not a genius.
Right, exactly.
It just means that they're dumb.
Even if you're a critic's pick, okay. It just means you got more to go. Got more. It's never enough.
It's not on me. It's not my responsibility.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not responsible for making a show that people like.
I'm just there to do the thing.
Yeah, I don't want to go through the emotional labor of like making jokes that people laugh at.
No,
okay,
forget it. This is for me. Don't you understand?
Yeah.
Well, I'm psyched for you, and
I
can't believe you start tomorrow. I can't believe it's
me neither. Actually, and I could I ask one thing that you stop saying that.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.